Welcome back to another episode of Wise Words Book Summaries. Today we're continuing on with the communication theme, and we're doing How to Talk to Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere by Larry King. And as a Brit, to be honest, I don't know about yourself, Tristan, but I have heard of Larry King, but yeah. I didn't really know too much about him. So for those, for some context for those listening, Larry King was an iconic American television and radio host. He was born on November the 19th, 1933 in Brooklyn, New York. He began his career in the 1950s, but rose to national prominence in the 1970s as a radio host. King is best known for hosting Larry King Live on CNN from 1985 to 2010, where he conducted thousands of interviews with a wide range of guests, from politicians and celebrities to business magnates and everyday people. His open-ended questions and non-confrontational manner allowed his guests to express themselves freely, making his show a staple of American broadcast television. Over his career, King won numerous awards, including two Peabodys, which I don't even know what that is, but and an Emmy. Okay, I know what an Emmy is. Yeah. He passed away on January the 23rd, 2021, so relatively recently, leaving behind a legacy as one of the most influential media figures of his time. So that's his credentials for writing the book, right? Like,
yeah.
Even though I didn't necessarily watch too much of his stuff or hear too much of his stuff, he was well known to be a really good conversationalist and interviewer, which is, I guess, his motivation for writing this book.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've heard of him mostly because I've seen a lot of interviews of his with like actors and stuff like that.
Okay.
But yes, obviously it was like an American show host, so you didn't really get it as much over here. But yes, I can imagine if you're essentially, it's just practice, right?
Yeah.
And he's got like pressure on him from having like a live audience or so. So you can imagine that he would be like honing these questions and his communication skills, even if it wasn't like consciously, you can imagine that he's getting lots of feedback from his guests and he's like internally like, you know, improving in his techniques. So,
yeah. I mean, the man's conducted thousands of interviews with a, you know, massive, diverse range of people.
Yeah.
So he's definitely learned, you know, the skills of the trade to talk to almost about anybody, which is why the title, I guess, is the whole How to Talk to Anyone, Anytime, and Anywhere. And as you'll see in this book, so each chapter has a sort of specific type of use case for conversation. So some of it's to do with business, some of it's to do with public speaking. I personally thought his strongest points in this book were relative to small talk, interviews, questions. And I thought he lost, at least from my perspective, a little bit of punch with his ideas around business and stuff, because I don't think that was kind of his area of expertise. Okay. But obviously he's met loads of businessmen, et cetera, et cetera. So he does have some valid feedback, but the feedback also and the ideas were more vague than the beginning sort of small talk section. Mm. But we'll get into that. We'll cover that when we get there. So first of all, we'll start with the introduction. So we've all got to talk. So one of the things that Larry King learned is that there's nobody you can't talk to if you have the right attitude. Talking is the most essential form of human communication, the one that distinguishes us as species. And he realizes from a young age that, you know, if you can talk to anybody, you're going to get ahead in life. And I thought that was quite interesting. The realization that if you can just have the conversations you need to have, you can go where you need to go, because there's always somebody who can open a door for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's just the kind of universal skill, you know, it's what you can rely on every single person to be able to do, is to communicate. And if you're good at communicating, then you're going to be winning, essentially. It's that simple.
Yeah, exactly. So with his first chapter, it was called Talk 101. So the very basics of successful conversation. So there is four sort of elements that he covered. So one of them was honesty. So he emphasized the importance of honesty in conversations and in broadcasting. So sharing your experiences and feelings transparently, which will resonate with listeners. I mean, we cover this across multiple different areas of all the books you read, like authenticity, right? It's the same, same premise in my head. Then I really liked his idea of the right attitude. So embracing the willingness to engage in conversation, even in challenging situations, is vital. And he made a personal commitment to continuously improve his communication skills. I thought that was interesting. He had a story back where, I think when he first started off as a radio host, and he basically made it his mission that he was always going to look for ways to improve the way he communicates.
Mm.
which, you know, the right attitude in any discipline is important, right? Like the whole idea is almost about the back to the whole growth mindset. The basics of success anywhere is the right attitude in my head. The ability to be like, there's nothing that I can't learn or overcome, and challenge is part of the game.
Well, I think that's like quite a common theme that comes up in communication books as well, that we've talked about before. But this idea that like a lot of people seem to think communication is like you're either good at it or you're not. Like you're born with the skill or you're not. Whereas it's very easy to, you know, improve at it. It's like, it's just communication is a very broad thing, and you need to be able to deconstruct it into its little components and then be able to, oh, I want to be able to work on presentation. And what do I want to be able to work on in like presenting? It's just being a bit like kind of technical with it. But it is a skill, once again, like anything else, that you can actually improve at.
Yeah. And in the book, I quite liked it as well, because he was quite candid with his sort of early experiences before he became a radio host, and about his sort of mistakes, etc. And I think he had a really, really embarrassing experience with his first ever radio show, where he completely forgot his like words or whatever. And he was really, really embarrassed. And I think he said something along the lines of like, when he recovered from it, he actually just did, he sort of admitted to the listeners, oh, this is my first day, I'm really nervous. And apparently it went down quite well. But what it taught him, and which is why his point was the right attitude, was he realized at that point that he wasn't ready. But at the same time, he was like, right, well, I'm going to get better at this. I'm going to make sure this, the next time the situation comes around, I'm going to be ready to say what I have to say. And yeah, like, I guess it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, there's that post-traumatic stress, isn't there? There's also post-traumatic growth. And I feel like he had that sort of traumatizing experience where he's like, crap, I can't let that happen again.
Mm. Yeah, you can go one of two ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sorry, the four basics. So you've got honesty, the right attitude. Number three, which is pretty important, probably one of the most important, is the interest in others. You need to show genuine interest in the other person. King would suggest maintaining eye contact and leaning in to ask about them, and acknowledging everyone's expertise in some area fosters respect and attentive listening. I quite like this idea as well he had, which was everybody's got some sort of expertise that you don't realize they have, or something interesting about them. I mean, I think we've discovered this in like How to Have Impossible Conversations too, which is everybody does have some interesting reason for the things, or the reasons they believe the things they do. And it's up to you to try and uncover those reasons and explore them. And if you just shut people off as, oh, they're not interesting, I don't like that opinion or whatever, then you're never going to learn, and you're never going to get into a conversation with anybody, right?
Yes, absolutely. You need to shift into that kind of attitude of learning, you know, that like these people might have something that you don't know, or that something that they, even if you disagree on, it's like I feel like there's always something that can pique your interest. You just need to find the right angle at it, you know? Find the right bit that you're trying, that will spur you on and will make you interested in them. Maybe you're not interested in this bit, but like you are from this angle. I reckon that's prominent in nearly every conversation, to be fair.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody has interesting things about them that you just don't know, but you've never, you know, bothered to ask, let's just say, or went down the avenues when offered. I mean, this is part of what he does for a living, right? With the interviewing, etc., or did for a living, sorry. Because he's passed away, but he listens to, you know, what people are saying, and he picks out certain things. Like, oh, why did you say that? You know, you do that? That's really interesting. Which also then leads into the very last part of the basics of successful conversation, which is openness about yourself. So reciprocal openness is key. While it's not necessary to overshare or constantly talk about oneself, revealing personal likes, dislikes, and background as part of healthy conversational exchange. This openness helps build connections and understanding, and it just makes sense, doesn't it? It also kind of reminds me slightly a bit of with the, once again, How to Have Impossible Conversations, where they talk a lot about modeling the behavior you want. So if you can model self-deprecation or whatever, and you can model that you don't take yourself too seriously, and that you're willing to give up personal information that might be sensitive, you're highly likely to get somebody to reciprocate that back. But it requires you to do it first.
Yeah.
Most of the time, that is.
It's kind of interesting, because you can kind of relate this to tit for tat, you know, the evolutionary like attitude towards people. Like, there is something at risk, and there is the friction or the hesitancy to act first because that other person could take advantage of you. But if you do act first and then they act, then they can see like a model to follow to some extent. And so they can go with you. And it kind of also it like signals to them that you're willing to risk it.
I think the key word there for me, at least, is signaling. I think it's really interesting because it signals that you're willing to be open and that that's the normal thing that you do in a conversation. And therefore, you kind of almost semi expect it back. It's a bit like in the tit for tat. If you signal that you're going to be honest, it's highly likely they're going to be honest back, unless, of course, they're a master manipulator. And, oh, hang on a second. Here you go. Yeah, this guy's going to be honest. I'm off here. So then he finished off the chapter with some tips for improving speaking skills. One of them are, so the first one I quite liked. So it's talk to yourself at home occasionally. It's a good way to practice speaking. And we spoke about this quite recently where it's like, if you want to build in certain words or phrases into your vocabulary, it's probably best to just, even though it probably looks really stupid, walk around your house, just repeating them.
Yeah.
Like if there's a certain phrase that you kind of want to say, a certain response, I guess, to certain things that people might ask you. The best way is literally to just repeat it. And he had no problem. He used to like walk around his house just chatting to himself half the time. If you looked in, you think he's crazy.
No, because it just makes so much sense. You're actively spending energy on externalizing something through verbalizing it. So by making your brain act on something, you're telling it this is important. So the more you do it, the more familiar it comes, the more you start to learn it, the more it starts to like break down and become much more familiar to you. And then it just makes a lot more sense, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, on the same idea here, for another tip is using private spaces, a quiet room or your car for practicing a speech. I mean, you could do that in your house anyway, but you sort of like the idea of compartmentalizing where you do certain things. So like, oh, I'm in the car, I'm going to practice my speech I'm going to give.
Well, now you can do it on Vision Pro, mate.
Oh, there you go. That's it.
Just download the like keynote space and then off you go.
That's it. I need to just get one of those first.
Maybe it's about $3,000, but you know, maybe it's worth just.
I can see a massive use case for that, 100%. Like you said, like, putting up like a massive theater of people and practicing a speech in front of them. I mean, you can do that at home as well, right? So, and then once again, another one, it's all about practice here. So practice speaking in front of a mirror. It helps to see your facial expressions and body language, which is great for improving public speaking. And that's something I feel like me personally, I would be pretty self-conscious doing that, but I guess that's the whole point. You're meant to look at yourself and realize, oh crap, I'm saying it in this way I really dislike, which is part of the uncomfort, right? That's three of the tips he gave for improving speaking skills, and funny enough, all of it is just practice.
Like, so much of this like comes down to practice, and whatever the like special like actionable tip is that they give you, it's just, once again, you're just practicing that thing.
You still have to do it, right? Exactly. Just because it's like an idea or a tip doesn't mean you have to actually do the tip.
Yeah, exactly.
Get better. So
All right. So yeah, that was the basics. Now moving on to chapter two. So breaking the ice. So building comfort in conversation. So overcoming natural shyness is a common challenge in conversations with new people, which is actually like a big thing. And I feel like shyness masquerades itself in multiple different ways because it's so easy to rationalize. You could easily, like, I've had it multiple times where I'm shy to go and talk to someone, but I'll then come up with some justification that it's not me just being shy. It's like, oh no, they're probably busy. Oh no, they're about to talk to that person. And it's funny that it kind of like, you know, it masquerades itself. And then remember that most people feel nervous when talking to someone they haven't met before. Conveying enjoyment in the conversation can help both parties feel more at ease. And reflect on common beginnings, as many of us start from similar backgrounds, which can create a sense of relatability.
Yeah, I thought this was quite an interesting point. Like this, the idea of framing every sort of new interaction as, we're both nervous here. Like most of the time, unless somebody's really, really confident, which funny enough, actually usually means they're not 100% confident. They've almost compensating some level, right? They're pretending to be confident, right? I think it's probably the best way of putting it. But remembering that you and the other person are both nervous, I think it's a massive positive frame you can put yourself in, like, oh, I'm not the only one feeling this. Therefore, my goal with this conversation is to make this other person feel at ease. So I feel like that's probably one of the biggest fears people have, I guess, when striking up a new conversation with somebody is, oh, it's going to be really awkward. They're like, we're both going to feel this awkward level. And we've all been in those conversations where you see something something that you think is just so awkward. I was telling you the other day when I had like a call with a bunch of people and I just somebody said like, how are you? Completely ignored it, went straight into something else. I was like, oh, in hindsight, I was like, that is so bad. But once again, now realizing that she was equally as nervous as I was in this whole interaction, makes me feel a bit like, oh, she's probably now at ease because I've managed to get it going, maybe on like a completely different tangent, but at least the conversation's going. It's not like, oh, that awkward silence of, oh my God, who's going to speak next? What do we say?
I wonder if also, weirdly, you could make someone feel more comfortable by doing something that makes yourself feel uncomfortable in front of them.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah.
They're like, well, I can't fuck up that bad. So
it's like you got like a massive bogey, so you just like,
yeah. You're like, okay, now it's that, now it's smooth sailing.
Yeah. So I also quite like this other idea which you're saying about conveying enjoyment in the conversation. But I do think there's a caveat to that, because if you go into a conversation like, hey, how are you? It's like, hey, I'm really enjoying speaking to you. Like it becomes kind of creepy. It needs to kind of just be like, I guess you need to almost convey with your body language and your smile and your face that you're enjoying the conversation, rather than being, you know, sort of forthright and being like, yeah, this is just such a great conversation, because that would come across really probably sarcastic if it comes too early, you know.
Yes, it does. Yeah, no, I can imagine that. But it's interesting because we all know those kinds of people that have loads of energy, and whatever they talk about, even if it's the most boring fucking thing, they can somehow convey it in a way that is quite enjoyable, or they're like, they almost seem passionate about it or whatnot, and it has a lot of energy. And I think energy is actually quite like an important thing to bring to a conversation, because it's present, it's there, it doesn't just die, and it's got to like, it's, you know, if
it's contagious too, relatively. I mean, unless you're talking to like a brick wall, there are some people who obviously drain energy, which is probably why people don't like spending time around with them, you know. But it is relatively contagious, like you said. If you come with a decent amount of energy, you probably get some energy back.
Yeah.
Or at least you lift the energy in between the two of you, or between the group, or whatever.
Absolutely. All right. So moving on. So initiating conversations. So use the setting, such as a party or event, as the conversation starter. And I think that's just such an easy way to like start chatting to people. Like, you know, you're at a party and it's like, oh, so how do you know Josh?
Yes, literally that. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just, it's so easy. And then like that gets you in, and then there's
more. Well, like, who do you know here? Right. That kind of thing. Like who do you know from this party? Like,
so easy. So very easy one. And then inquire about unique or interesting items in the environment, like travel, souvenirs, or artwork, to spark a discussion, essentially. You know, anything that's like slightly unique that you can comment on. I mean, there's probably so many things in your environment already.
Mate, there's things you don't even realize. Like, for example, there's like red solo cups. You'd be like, oh, red solo cups, you're playing beer pong tonight or something. Yeah, you know, you could just start a conversation randomly off the back of that. Like, oh, you're wearing trainers. You go for a run. So I don't know.
Yeah, that person's gonna be. Yeah. And then on top of that, you obviously bring the enjoyment. Yeah, you go for a fucking run then, mate. Yeah. Oh god.
Maybe don't open with that one, but you can just always pick something out. You know, oh, those are I love those Nikes. Like, you know, I love those trainers. One of them or something like that.
Yeah. No, it's true. Absolutely. So yeah, a lot to go off, and rather than feeling stuck, like you, because I think it's very easy to overthink the question that you should that you should ask someone, or like how to start a conversation, when realistically it can just be as simple as that. It's like, oh, where'd you get your trainers from? They look pretty cool.
Yeah, no, literally, it could be anything. I think that's almost like the perfect get out of free jail card. It's like, what are they wearing? Always reference what they're wearing and ask them where they got it from or something like that. Yeah. Like, oh, I like that. You know, that's cool. Or where'd you get it from? And you know, you can start a conversation that way. I think like you said, it's one of the things everybody just overthinks it.
But the goal is to literally just get someone to chat, is to talk, essentially. Because once they do, they start to, well, depending on the person, but most people end up providing some form of content which allows you to ask more questions or go off or like create stories off of. So you want someone to be able to talk, and it can be as easy as possible. All right. So then evading yes or no questions. So avoid questions that lead to short one word answers. And we call those like kind of closed questions where like the answer is like yes or no. Because there's nothing really to go off. You want like open-ended questions where you can, you know, go on a whole bloody journey. And then frame inquiries to encourage more elaborate and informative responses. So yeah, maybe you're like opening with a certain question with the idea to like go down this particular route and like, you know, explore whatever topic that you're talking about.
Yeah, it could be even something like, you know, we talked about like being at a party. Wow, you know, Josh, there must be some sort of story about how you guys met.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. Well, he met
him. Tell me the story of how you met. Tell me that. Do you know what I mean? You can frame the whole,
yeah,
the way it's going to be presented to you.
Well, they met running after.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, they're wearing trainers. So.
yeah. Okay. And then on to the next bit. So emphasizing listening. The first rule of conversation is to listen more than you talk, as this is how you learn. You, like we were just talking about before, you want to be engaged in that kind of learning attitude, that learning mindset, so that, you know, you want to unveil, like, what, when you're learning new things, the emphasis is on you, right? It's novel. And so that piques your interest naturally. You're like, oh, okay, how does this apply to me? That's how your brain essentially works. It's looking for novelty to some extent. So if you're already in that kind of mindset where you're like, okay, what's this person going to say that's like, you know, going to inform how I live or how I see the world? What's going to be new? And so hence you need to be in that kind of like listening attitude. Good listening skills enhance your ability to respond and engage effectively in the conversation. And Dale Carnegie, the guy who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People, highlights the importance of encouraging others to speak about their experiences and achievements.
I mean, that's a really easy one, isn't it, in my head? The whole, let's say you're having a conversation with somebody, they drop what they do for a living. You can just be like, wow, that's really cool. Like what have you done with that, etc. And whenever tell you they've done certain things, just like, oh, that's sick. Like, tell me more.
Yeah.
Once again, if people have, you know, if they've achieved certain things or done certain things, they're going to want to talk about them, especially if they're like proud of them. So you're going to end up building amazing rapport by just like listening to their, almost their highlight reel. That's the way I think about it. You know, it's like their best moments, and you're showing real interest. They're going to be like, wow, this person actually, like, you know, is, because normally, it's funny, isn't it? I feel like people have, they've done great things. Most people have done things they're proud of, but how often do they get to talk about it with the people they care about? Probably not much, because people don't ask, you know, and they're probably just dying for somebody to just dump it on, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the idea that, get them to speak about their experience and achievements is key, because it's not necessarily their occupation. It's not necessarily their work, right? When we're talking about this, this could be any kind of experience, like, oh, where'd you go on holiday? Or like, have you ever gone hiking? Have you ever done like something random like that? You know, that you're tapping into something that is not normally spoken about. It's not the standard, oh, so what do you do? Oh, that's cool, like blah blah. It's you're tapping into the actual experiences, the things that they kind of cherish themselves, that they value.
Well, yeah. Well, the things they've gone out to try and achieve and got or done or whatever. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. All right. So understanding body language. Authentic body language naturally complements verbal communication. Forced body language can be uncomfortable and ineffective. And eye contact is critical. Maintain it throughout the conversation to demonstrate engagement and interest. That actually is so important. I think it's a really big one. And it's because it kind of just, you notice when someone starts to like look away. You know, when like you're
at 100%. It's one of the first, you just know they're not interested. You can see it. It's like, like you just said, you know you're having a good conversation when the eye contact's pretty much there the whole time. And you're right, it's the moment they start like almost like stop facing you, look kind of away, and they keep darting their eyes somewhere else, and you're just like, ah, okay, this person wants out. Extract them, get the helicopter.
they're just interested in something else. So that's especially important. And it's like, it's funny because it's also used as a tactic when you don't want to talk to someone. I've had it multiple times where someone keeps badgering me and I'm like, yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, actively trying to look away because they don't take
it. You're trying to send a signal in my head. You're
exactly,
almost trying to tell
it is,
them.
Yeah.
You're trying to be like, pick up the signal. I'm like, you know, stop fucking talking to me in a nice, comfortable way.
Yeah. All right. So then tackling taboo topics. So while the range of taboo topics has narrowed, sensitivity around certain subjects remains. Assess your relationship with the person before delving into personal or potentially controversial topics, which is, I mean, pretty obvious, you'd think. And then being informed about current events and popular topics can make conversations more relevant and engaging.
Once again, I mean, I feel like that last point about being, you know, informed of what's going on in the world is just useful in the sense that most people have that as shared knowledge depending upon who you're talking to. So it's a good, easy way to sort of transition a conversation to something that you both know. Because when you don't know somebody's background, etc., at least you can be like, oh, did you see on the news there was this, this, and this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, like as I said at the beginning, this there is certain parts of this book which is like super practical, like, oh, I didn't know about that, that's cool. But quite a lot of these ideas are pretty self-evident to some degree. Like, you know, assessing the relationship before you dive into, you know, politics is probably a good idea.
Yeah. Well, so then the last point here. So the key to successful conversation, staying informed and relevant. Familiarity with current events and societal trends is essential for relevant conversations. Exactly what we were just saying before.
Yeah.
And understanding what's on people's minds, such as recent news, can make your conversations more engaging and meaningful. And it is just like, I mean, it's just such an easy win. You already know that most people will probably know about whatever is going on in the world, like big things that are going on in the world. And so you can almost, it makes it easier to make that, to jump into that, because that assumption is pretty clear. You know, most people know about Ukraine and Russia. Most people know about, like, you know, these different things that are going on in your country. So it's quite an easy in.
I guess it's kind of wrong to assume everybody you go into conversation with knows these things, but it's, you can assume, I was gonna say 90, but you can't assume that much, but you can assume a decent amount of people probably have heard of the things you're going to bring up, and therefore it's quite a good bridge into a conversation, potentially even once again as a conversational starter, you know. Although it's like, oh, like, you don't go to somebody like, oh, what do you think about the war in Ukraine? That's a great, fantastic starter, isn't
it?
I haven't even warmed them up yet and straight in with that.
Jesus.
Cool. So we've gone through the sort of talk 101. We've now covered the sort of initiating a conversation. Now we're going into chapter 3, which is the social talk. So these are tips on engaging in various social settings. So I quite like this because he talked about like different, you know, social settings. So the first one is navigating cocktail parties. So you've got to aim for one-on-one conversations amidst larger groups. Keep conversations short and move around to mingle effectively. So I like this guy because he thinks he's just networking, I guess. It's like,
Make
sure we get through everybody. Got to give out those business cards.
Yeah.
And then utilize the powerful question why to delve deeper into discussions. I quite enjoyed the whole idea of, you know, if there is a big group, it's better to try and get, especially if you're trying to have a deeper conversation, get somebody on a one-on-one basis. Because if you're speaking in a group, it tends to be more superficial, more humorous, maybe more banterous. And the whole idea of using why as well, I quite liked, because it's a classic, like, oh, why'd you do that? Like, what made you decide to do this? And then all of a sudden you go into somebody's backstory, right? Oh, I'm in law. Okay, why are you in law? What made you decide to do that? All of a sudden there's something way more interesting comes out of that, like the way somebody thinks and, you know, their upbringing, etc. And then the next part, which was linked to the sort of cocktail parties, was exiting conversations tactfully. And this is funny because this is the book where I got the thing from, which I told you about the other day, when using polite excuses like needing to use the restroom or needing to grab a drink. So you transition out by introducing, you can transition out by introducing another person who walks past. I think that's quite a natural way of doing it. Like, have you met Steve? Steve, come here, whatever. That's probably more natural, or like a way that's less obvious than, you know, what I was saying the other day was like, oh, I'm going to go get a drink. It's like, okay, we'll buy that. Thanks.
Yes.
I mean, somebody could just be thirsty, I guess you could say, or could actually just need the loo. But yeah, one of the best ways to sort of leave a conversation without being I guess, rude. I think people know, like, this is pretty self-evident, right? So nobody's going to say to your face, yeah, do you know what? You're really boring. I'm done speaking with you. I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
So yeah, moving on to small dinner parties. So on small dinner parties, you want to focus on lighthearted topics and involve everybody. And I quite like this next point, which was assisting shy participants by asking for their opinions or bringing up subjects they are comfortable with. So he talked a lot about sort of reading the room. Mm. And when you see people who aren't speaking as much, trying to get them involved.
Yeah.
And he did obviously try to differentiate, because sometimes people who are shy is because they might have a controversial opinion on a certain topic. So if you're all talking about a topic and then you go, oh, what's your opinion on it? You almost then put them in the crosshairs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're like, oh, crap. So it's almost like reading the room, being like, okay, well, this guy's being a bit shy. You can kind of like, oh, so what do you think about this, without asking them for a stance or whatever?
Yeah.
Plus also then being, oh, I know this person's interested in this. Oh, what? So let's talk about this now, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. No, I really like that, actually, because it does like include a lot of people into the group.
Yeah, because it's always like, especially when certain topics are being talked about, like let's just say it gets into the topic of sport or something, and then the other person, we're all talking about rugby or football or whatever, and there's somebody there who just doesn't follow it. It's, you know, it's going to be a pretty tough conversation for them. Yeah. Unless you bring in something maybe they know about.
Yeah, and there's also like, there also tends to be, you know, there could be people in a group who love the sound of their own voice, and they're yeah. like kind of hogging the mic, essentially. So it's nice to pass it along.
Exactly. And then another one of the tips was quarterbacking conversation. So try to select universally engaging topics. This is quite a hard one, because what you might define as universally engaging to one person might be different to the other person. Like, you know, talking about the concept of free will, right? Somebody might enjoy talking about that. Other people might look at it and go, "What? Well, I can think of better things to do."
Yeah, yeah.
And then avoid dominating the talk, like you said. You know, loving the sound of your own voice, and encourage others to share their views, and utilize what if questions to stimulate interesting discussions. You know, what if we all had £1 million? What would you spend it on, or something like that?
Yeah, it's a good point. Because it also just like opens up multiple opportunities for talking, right? Like, yeah, it could go anywhere, essentially. There's like endless opportunities.
Well, with the what if, you can create infinite exactly. possibilities. Like, what yeah. if we yeah. did this? What if we did that? What if we had this? You know, it's all, you essentially, your imagination is the limit with that. Yeah. And you can have some really interesting discussions, like, you know, you know, what if you all had $1 million? What would be the first thing you spend it on, that type of thing? Or then you get to see how people think, you know, what they actually value.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Of course, we've done the... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just like that it like can convey what people value. Maybe not the like actual answer to the question, yeah. but the implicit like meaning behind it, or their answers, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's quite almost quite like a fun game to do, the sort of what if, and then you pose scenarios. I feel like there probably is games out there that exist that I don't know of right now, but maybe somebody listening does, where you pose these scenarios and people answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So one of the last, so what we got, we've gone through the navigating the cocktail parties. We've done the small dinner gatherings. Now we're moving on to family events. So weddings and funerals. So use connections to the event, the bride, the groom, the deceased as conversation starters. Share personal positive anecdotes. Be sympathetic, yet avoid overly somber tones at a funeral. And what I quite liked about something you said about funerals was everybody kind of goes, I'm really sorry for your loss. And he kind of sort of railed against that and says something along the lines of, like I just said here, about bringing up a personal positive anecdote with the person. Like, oh, I remember this person so well when we first met. We did this, this, and this.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Rather than starting with the whole, you know, I'm really sorry for your loss, because they've heard that so many times. He's like, at this point, they've kind of come dead to that. They want something better, almost. Like, they'll be happy to hear a positive anecdote absolutely. Or experience that you've had with this person. And I thought that was quite an interesting way of handling it. Like, oh, I remember the time when we did this, this, and this was so awesome. Like, yeah.
Yeah. No, very good point. I like that.
And so after the wedding and sort of funerals, etc., we got talking to celebrities. And I quite liked his opinions on this. So it was treat celebrities as normal people with diverse interests. So avoid being intimidated by their fame. Engage them in regular, varied topics of conversation. And I also thought that's interesting, because once again, most celebrities probably get, you know, pestered for selfies and, oh, what are you doing in this next film? Or what are you doing this, this, and this? But, you know, they're people too. They have interests. They have things they care about. And yeah, just treating them as a normal person, trying to find out actually what makes them tick, you know, what they're interested in, why they do the things they do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's actually, yeah, I think so many celebrities are in need of that. They desperately just want to be treated normally because they were normal before. And now it's like they feel like they can't be themselves anymore around just standard people.
Yeah, I wonder if you lose like your sense of self a little bit with that.
I think you do. I think a lot of celebrities also go a bit mad. And like it can go to their head because they're not really treated like normal people anymore. You know, they are put on this pedestal and that's where they should stay, essentially.
Yeah, you also get treated as an object of... an object to be used almost, you know, people like use the selfies to try and increase their own status almost, you know, oh, I got a photo with David Beckham, you know, it's.
Yeah, it's not for David Beckham.
It's less about them being an individual.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's less about them actually being a person with feelings and whatever. It's just, oh, he's like an object that has high status and I want to be associated with that object. I don't care about him. I just want to be, you know, ah, oh, photo with me with him. I look better because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So yeah, to finish off the chapter, we've got some general conversation tips. So be open and find common ground, listen actively and respect others' expertise, make eye contact and be aware of body language, pay attention to the physical setting to facilitate comfortable interactions. This is more like, am I getting too close to their personal space? Like if they're backing away from me, take a step back. Don't keep like, you know, getting closer. Yeah. And remember that every social event from casual parties to formal gatherings has its unique conversational dynamics, and that's kind of why he gave these sort of different ideas around, you know, a cocktail party vis a dinner gathering vis a funeral, right? You say different things,
yeah,
and you navigate the social environment differently, and it's important to recognize where you're at before you start doing these things.
Absolutely, because it informs what you're going to talk to them about or what you can talk to them about, right? Because it just changes the dynamic and how you engage with someone. So we talked about the basics now. We talked about how to break the ice and like the social talks. And now we're going to talk about the 8 things the best talkers have in common. So common traits of effective communicators. So successful individuals often view and discuss topics from unique perspectives. So once again, that's kind of like the novelty, right? It's like you're talking about a topic from a novel angle, and which kind of piques people's interests. And there's like so many, you can see so many like great speakers because they bring something hot, like very new. And that's why like comedians are very funny, right? Because they talk about something in a new light, in a novel way. And we like peak, like our interest is peaked and we're like, oh, okay, actually that's quite interesting. Even if it is in like a joke format. They possess wide-ranging interests and avoid limiting their conversations to personal experiences. Curiosity and empathy are key. They are frequently asking why and strive to understand others' perspectives. And listening to diverse viewpoints can significantly expand one's understanding, much like traveling.
These seem pretty broad but correct ideas around what would make somebody effective. I guess somebody who'd wide range of opinions, but also has an opinion or like a unique perspective, have a wide range of interests and therefore can synthesize, you know, points from different areas. Curious, I mean, that kind of makes sense as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If they're curious about everything, they're probably going to have some unique perspective on things.
Absolutely. And then incorporating humor. So humor is a valuable element in conversation, but it should feel natural and well-timed, not forced. Avoid forcing jokes, let humor flow organically within the context of the dialogue. And I think that's, yeah, that's quite important. Like we've all been in conversations where someone clearly thinks of a joke, but then the conversation continues and then they try to bring it back to it just so that they can say the joke and then the joke just falls flat. Because they're too caught up in saying their fucking joke. All right, so then moving on, developing a unique communication style. So successful communicators often have a distinct style that enhances their effectiveness. Examples include Edward Bennett Williams, soft-spoken, compelling listeners to pay closer attention. And there's Percy Forman, emotionally driven, using passionate speeches to connect. William Kunstler, known for his bombastic and confrontational approach. And Louis Neiser focuses on fact-building and structure argumentation. And I think all these kind of build on a point that we mentioned in the last podcast where, you know, you can learn so much from observing people. If you want to be a good speaker, then go and listen to the speakers that you like. Take out the points that you think that the things that make them a really good speaker, right? Are they very relaxed and are they attentive? Are they very good at listening? Are they great at asking questions? Like, pick out the things that you really like about them and then start to implement them. Because naturally, not everyone is going to be to your liking. But you will come across people, whether you hear them on a podcast or whatnot, and you're just super into them. You think that they are a great speaker. And those are the people that you should be listening to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's like you just said there, is like picking out the elements that you want to bring into your sort of own repertoire and try and mimic, I guess, their style. I do think there is also a limit to that in the sense that we all have our like natural inclinations and ways we present certain things, we speak and stuff. Mm. Maybe, for example, we really want to be the bombastic style but or confrontational, but maybe it just doesn't really suit your personality, and therefore maybe it's best to try and adapt it in a way that fits you.
Yeah, I agree.
I do quite like this idea of having a unique communication style, and I wonder whether it's probably a good idea to even try and have enough self-awareness to work out where your strengths when it comes to your speaking is, and then develop these further, or find masters who have your style and trying to, you know, incorporate some of the things they do.
Yeah.
So we've gone through the social environments, where all the tips for certain social environments. We've then just touched on some of the commonalities between the best talkers. And now we're moving on to chapter 5, which is trendy talk and political correctness. So starting off, the importance of clear language. This is something which was actually covered in The Art of Explanation. But effective communication focuses on clarity rather than trying to impress with speech. So use simple, direct language. Overly complex or inflated words can hinder understanding. Mark Twain highlighted the significant impact of choosing the right words, which I also think is important. So not even just being, you know, using the most simple language as possible, but using the actual words that are the most correct to use. To avoid any sort of, you know, miscommunication, misunderstanding. One of the key points he's got here as well is avoiding trendy and inflated language. So resist the urge to use buzzwords or fashionable phrases and aim for freshness and originality in conversation. So avoid cliches and trendy terms. Another thing which me and you are trying our best to get rid of is eliminating nothing words and filler noises. So words like, you know, basically, hopefully, often add no value to a conversation. And avoiding filler noises such as and which can distract from your message. I like this. You made a good point. Is the unchallenged leader in all of these categories is that, you know, and it's so classic, you know. It's really hard to, like, you almost have to bite your tongue not to do it. And it's funny because even in French, I've noticed it. So they have the word quoi, which means what. But when you add it to the very end of a sentence, it means, you know. And the amount of French people who finish a sentence with quoi, it's just ridiculous. Which is also so, it's such a weird concept, though, the idea of the word what being put at the end of a sentence, becoming kind of like a, you know, but it's like you say something, you go, what?
Yeah.
it's weird. What?
Yeah, it's a good point. Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah, I think every culture probably
has their own equivalent of like a filler word of like, in fact, another thing you say a lot in French is you see. So like, tu vois? It's like, oh, you see? It's the same, basically. It's,
yeah, we say the same. And like, we say like a lot. I mean, that's more of a filler, but interesting.
But it's funny because obviously all these books and all the stuff we've read recently kind of rails against them. But actually the function of it is to allow you time to think. And the worst thing is we've got into the point where in my head, there's almost like a behavioral mesh where when I say it helps me think in a weird way. And I find sometimes when I stop myself from saying it, I actually blank a little bit because I'm not in the routine that I've created for myself. I just said it again there. So,
well, it's interesting because obviously there are different types of filler words. So like we were just saying, you see, or, you know, I wonder if that's less of a filler words that allow you to time to think, but more just give you a sense of like security or like,
yeah, no, I
do get what I mean.
No, I get what you're saying, because like you just said, do you know what I mean? It's like you're trying to get that. I'm on a wavelength with you. Like if I say and you, if you go, no, I don't know, then I'm like, okay, cool. Well, now we can, I can try and re-explain it to you or re-say it. So I can see that. Yeah. But I do think we do sometimes say it without the expectation of a response being like, no, I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right. It's not the same as an, where an is kind of like, I'm thinking further, you know, it's kind of like, have you understood what I've said?
Hmm.
So yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, okay. Right, so breaking bad speech habits. So to improve speaking habits, self-awareness and discipline are crucial. Enlisting a friend to monitor and correct your speech can be beneficial. Thinking ahead about what to say helps reduce reliance on fillers. And one of the points he had here was sort of like having like a, I was going to say like more like a, maybe like a wager with a friend, or have somebody who you actively want to stop you from doing these filler words, and they have to call you out every time you do it. So you said it again, like you know, you said it again. But trying to get to the point where you become so self-conscious every time you say it that eventually you can not say it, right? It's like you're never going to correct it without actually putting conscious effort towards noticing and then trying to correct it every single time. So
absolutely, absolutely. It's just a habit at the end of the day.
Exactly. You know, and it's something we all feel, I guess, comfortable with doing. And we have done for so long that even the idea of just staying silent instead of doing the, you know, is almost painful in a way. It's always just feels weird.
All right. So we've just been talking about how to eliminate nothing words, those filler words like and like and those kind of things, and make our speech sound very trendy, which is perfect because we're going to be moving on to the next section, which is on business talk. So effective communication in business. Successful business individuals are invariably skilled communicators. Their basic principles are directness, openness, and effective listening are crucial in business as they are in social interactions. Within your field, technical terms might be understood, but clarity is still key. Preparation is vital. Know your subject, anticipate questions, and understand what your audience needs to know.
This sounds art of explanation, right?
Literally.
Straight from the playbook.
Yeah. Anticipate questions, like know your audience. I mean, all these things you're going to find come up in all the different things.
It's just broad but good advice, right? But because I guess you can never really tailor specific advice to such a wide variety of potential conversations and things you might need to present / talk about, right? So it's almost like just extracting what you have to do, which is, you know your subject, anticipate the potential questions around the subject, and then understand what the audience knows/ needs to know. It's like, it kind of, it's a strategy that will always work, basically.
Exactly. Because, why would it fail? All right, so the art of selling. Selling skills are crucial, even outside traditional sales roles. Daily, you're selling your skills and experiences. So key sales rules are know your product well, and once a deal is made, don't overextend the sale.
And see, this is what I meant, whereas like with this section in particular, I was like, cool, you kind of just really scratched the surface of all this type of business communication, but you've not really like, cool, like know your product. Fantastic. Yeah. Like, great advice. But there wasn't really too much depth. But then he's not a salesman, is he? He's like an interviewer. Yeah. He's just extending his credibility across into other domains, which is
I guess like a good way of looking at that is like know yourself, you are a product, like how you can sell yourself and like
that's appeal to others. Which way you sell
this
yourself.
Is how you sell yourself. All right, so job interviews. Selling oneself effectively is crucial in job interviews. God, it's almost like I wrote this fucking book. Key strategies: show how you can benefit the employer, maintain openness, be well prepared, and ask questions. It's almost like I've never heard that advice for a job interview before.
Such a copy paste. This is what I mean. I just really, this section really kind of ruined it for me. I thought it was going quite well. There's lots of like nice practical actionable tips, which some of them which I hadn't heard of before. But then this, I was just like, oh, it's just straight out of the sort of LinkedIn recruitment book. Like,
geez. Yes, it does feel like that. Yeah, maybe that's where they got it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
maybe. When hiring, so look beyond qualifications, assess the candidate's enthusiasm and fit for the company culture. Be honest about the role and show enthusiasm for your company to attract the right candidates. And then interacting with bosses and subordinates. Communication with a boss should be respectful and informed. Understanding your boss's expectations and communication style is beneficial. Regular feedback to subordinates is essential. Be clear about performance, both good and bad, and avoid indirect communication. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. Meetings. So participant strategy. Attend only if necessary. Be concise and avoid unnecessary commentary. Ask questions and use humor appropriately. Leading meetings. Prepare thoroughly, start on time, be decisive and manage time effectively. And sometimes being slightly vague, like in...
Stengelese.
Can be... I have no idea what the fuck that means.
It's an American guy. Casey Stengel got away with words. The trouble was with the way he combined them. Stengelese became the term used to describe his vocabulary and implausible double talk.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just basically speaking gobbledygook, I think, is what he's saying.
Yes, fair enough. Okay.
Oh, dear.
Oh, I had a good little chuckle at that. All right, general business communication tips. Avoid overuse of buzzwords and trendy phrases. Be wary of nothing words like basically or you know, which add no value. And stay informed and relevant to be an effective conversationalist in the current business environment. Makes sense.
I was going to say, now that we finished that beautiful chapter around the most vague business advice you've ever received in your life, let's move into chapter 7, which was titled The My Best and Worst Guests and Why. I kind of, you know, removed all the sort of background stories around his guests because he's quite, I guess, like an old figure. I didn't recognize any of the people he was actually talking about. Mm. But I've tried to distill out the key qualities of a good guest and some of the characteristics of the less ideal guests. So, starting with that, so the key qualities of what Larry King would define as an excellent guest. So they have a passion for their work. Guests who are genuinely passionate about their work bring an infectious enthusiasm that engages audiences. 2, clarity and interest, the ability to explain their work in a clear, captivating way that piques the audience's curiosity. 3, which I thought was quite interesting, is a chip on their shoulder. Guests with a bit of an edge or a strong point of view often make more dynamic and engaging conversations. Mm. And 4, a sense of humor. A guest who can laugh at themselves adds a layer of relatability and charm to the discussion. And I thought it was quite interesting because it's almost like, obviously, he's talking here about what he thought was the best way or the best people to deal with in an interview for himself. But in my head, it's kind of like also a checklist for maybe the best way to present yourself in a way that people would like as well. Yeah. Oh, you're passionate about what you do. You can clearly articulate what it is you do. You have a chip on your shoulder. So you have a point of view that maybe could be seen as controversial, but maybe you just got a strong opinion. And 4, you can laugh at yourself. You have a bit of humor and it comes across as charming.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, it's something we could all aspire to be like, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are pretty spot on actually. And I really like the chip on the shoulder because it makes a lot of sense.
You want somebody with a bit of an edge, right? You're like, you don't want the classic chapter 6 business talk, which is there's nothing there that's a bit edgy. It's just cool.
Yeah, that's true.
So characteristics of a less ideal guest. So I call it this monotonous perspective. Guests who repeatedly harp on a single aspect, be it political, emotional, philosophical, tend to be less engaging. Variety and depth in conversation topics are key to keeping the audience interested. And that kind of makes sense. If somebody's just harping on about the same thing again and again and again, that can only last a certain amount of time in an interview or podcast conversation, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, leading on from that is bloopers and how to survive them, which is quite, poignant. I reckon there were so many bloopers. I reckon there just must be. I mean, I don't think, for instance, if you take what's the Irish guy, Graham Norton, I don't think that's actually filmed live. And I think that they edit it and cut it. But it must be like quite interesting when there is like a blooper and then like a celebrity has to like, find their way back or deal with it. or chat show host in this case.
Yeah.
So the inevitability of mistakes in communication. Communication, since its inception, has been accompanied by errors and mishaps. These bloopers are not exclusive to any particular field. They occur in all forms of communication. When you stumble, it's important to remember that this is a common experience shared by many. Overcoming mistakes. Number one, avoid fixating on potential errors. Focusing too much on the possibility of making a mistake can inadvertently lead to its occurrence. It's essential to divert your thoughts from these negative possibilities, which makes sense. Number two, maintain concentration. So staying focused and determined helps in minimizing errors. It requires effort, but with practice, it becomes more manageable. And I guess that makes a lot of sense in the idea that, weirdly, we make mistakes when we're like consciously thinking about them. And I think he talks about this weirdly in deliberate practice. But when you're focusing on something, then all the rest is like just muscle memory to some extent. You've done it a million times. You can do it again. But as soon as you start to put the spotlight on it and you start to overthink these, like, you know, the possible errors, or, you know, focusing on exactly on what you're doing, sometimes it actually leads to causing a mistake, which is ironic. Number three, perseverance is key. Even the most skilled speakers and professionals make mistakes. Remember that errors are a natural part of any process. In baseball, for instance, errors are so expected that they're officially recorded as statistics. And number four, stay unflustered. Embrace the old adage, he who never makes a mistake seldom makes anything else. Mistakes are part of growth and learning. The key is not to let them derail your progress or shake your confidence. Keep moving forward, learning from each slip up.
I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I quite like this idea of overcoming mistakes, or trying to have strategies for overcoming mistakes, because they're just going to happen.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it's speaking, regardless of like whatever it is you're doing, it's going to happen. So the ability to have, I guess, a healthy relationship with mistakes is important. As well as, I think, even having like a backup plan for certain things, like, I remember reading in one of the books I was recently reading about jokes. I can't remember that. I think it was like how to create a joke or something like that. Anyway, he talked a lot about how comedians, if they bomb, they always have like a sort of backup phrase that they use to try and, you know, re-engage the audience. Like if a joke goes badly, they already have this backup phrase, which makes them feel more confident to make the mistake, because they know if it comes, they've already got this sort of like, I guess, net below them. They can just come out and say it, and it's usually funny. I mean, obviously, if you screw that up as well, then you might be feeling a bit like, oh crap. But the idea of preparing for a mistake and having a strategy for it is interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I really like that, actually. That's quite cool.
So yes, now after discussing bloopers and overcoming mistakes, we're moving on to chapter 9. So I gotta do what? How to give a speech. So demystifying public speaking. Public speaking often seems shrouded in mystery, but its core principle is straightforward. It's an extension of regular conversation where you share your ideas with others. Unlike casual chats, public speaking gives you full control over the direction and content of the discussion. And it's funny, this is actually a point which, when we move on to the Mortimer Adler book, I think it was called How to Speak and Listen, he talks a lot about this, which is like the difference between having a conversation with somebody, which is a sort of bi-directional two-way thing, and obviously presenting to many people either through TV or whatever. It's like unidirectional. I'm the one who's saying it. Nobody else can interrupt. So therefore I can say, technically you can say controversial things, because nobody's going to say, you know, yeah, smash your TV and communicate with you, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is.
So essential strategies for public speaking. So number one is speak on familiar topics. So choose subjects you're knowledgeable about. This familiarity breeds confidence and authenticity in your delivery. I mean, that kind of just makes sense. If you're stood up talking about some sort of, you know, historical event which you have no idea about, that's probably not a good idea. It would be good for comedy though, or improv. Two, preparation is crucial. So embrace the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. When you're well-versed in your topic, preparing your speech becomes more manageable. So clarify the main points at the beginning and revisit them at the end in different wording for reinforcement. And then three is practice makes perfect. So whether you're using a full script or just notes, rehearse your speech multiple times. This practice will help you get comfortable with the material and refine your delivery style. And these three points here kind of remind me of the art of explanation anyway, isn't it? So yeah, you're already familiar in the art of explanation with the topic, because you've got the strands. you're preparing in the art of explanation multiple times your argument and your speech, therefore preparation is crucial. And then the practice makes perfect, part of the art of explanation preparation stage where you're, you know, rehearsing.
Yeah. And yeah, then, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because you've got like we were talking about earlier on, there are multiple tactics, but essentially you just have to familiarize yourself with them. Whether that's like certain words or phrases or anything like that, verbalizing them, getting used to them so that they become part of your repertoire and that you use them often on the cuff. Then that like fuels your preparation. Here we're talking about a speech, okay? So there can be a specific like, you know, bit of text that you're actually like preparing for. But just in general, even with conversations, you now have all of those kind of joining words and those everything like that. There's like tactics prepared because you're familiar with them. And then it's just about, so you've got that preparation and then it's just practicing, like engaging in more and more conversations or doing more speeches and things like that. I feel like you just can't go wrong with those three components.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Once again, like you said, it's just most of this all boils down to just repetition, practice, mistakes, go again, go again, go again. Yeah. Eventually, you know, if you put in 1,000 reps, you're going to be pretty good. There's like, once again, there's not really like a magic pill. There's, you know, tips and techniques, but you still have to do them repeatedly to get to the point where you're actually going to be good at something anyway.
Absolutely.
So yeah, finishing off the chapter with some additional public speaking tips. So you've got engage with your audience. So eye contact is key. Ensure you look at your audience instead of fixating on your notes or staring at a distant point. Then you've got emphasize key points. So use underlining or highlighting to mark important words or phrases in your script or notes for emphasis. This once again was talked about in the art of explanation. Then we've got maintain good posture. So stand comfortably, but avoid slouching. Proper posture improves breathing and appearance. Got some microphone techniques here. So adjust the microphone to suit your height to speak comfortably without bending or straining. I mean, it'd look pretty weird if you were like bending over to speak into a microphone or on your tiptoes. You just look like a prick.
Yeah.
Pace and inflection. So be conscious of the speed and tone of your speech. Emphasize certain phrases or ideas to enhance the impact of your message. This once again, like, it's funny because we're always going to bump into this problem when we're reading all the communication books. All the ideas have been repeated before in the book we covered last time. But you know, it is what it is. I mean, if anything, it just shows that it's like a universal principle of communication, exactly. Right? In my head, at least.
No, precisely. All right. So then, moving on to chapter 10, which is again more notes on public speaking. So understanding your audience. One of the key principles in public speaking is to know your audience well. This knowledge helps you connect with them from the beginning by addressing their perspectives and concerns. To prepare adequately, gather information about your audience. Learn about the organization, its members, their background, and the pressing issues they face. This preparation allows you to tailor your speech to resonate more deeply with your audience. Another thing that we touched on in the Art of Explanation. Like really knowing your audience. Surprising your audience. At times, delivering a message that deviates from what the audience expects can be highly effective. Presenting an unexpected viewpoint can capture their attention and make your speech more memorable. That's such a very good point, and it's kind of something that like comedians do, right? It's like reward prediction error. They build up this idea of where something is going and then they suddenly turn it around on its head. Yeah. And it like, you know, it gets everyone's attention. So yeah, that's quite a good point. The importance of conciseness. Remember the old adage, brevity is the soul of wit. The same holds true for public speaking. A concise speech can often be more powerful and impactful than a lengthy one. Aim to express your ideas clearly and succinctly. And then... keep it simple. These literally are like point for point, almost, you know, the anatomy of an explanation.
You read this book, maybe.
Yeah, it's almost, yeah. Strange that. Keep it simple. So the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, is invaluable in public speaking. Avoid using complex vocabulary, overly complicated sentences, technical jargon, or the latest buzzwords. Strive for simplicity to ensure your message is clear and easily understood by your audience.
Yeah. So like as you said, pretty much everything we've just covered in the last two chapters around public speaking is definitely being covered in the Art of Explanation. And I am 90% sure we will end up with some form of these ideas again coming up in one of the future books. I mean, I already said about the Mortimer Adler, how to speak and listen. There's already some touch points with this. There's the book I'm currently reading, Think Faster and Talk Smarter. That definitely has some of the points from it. So if you're at least, I guess one of the ways to memory, isn't it, is exposure to ideas, repeated exposure. So if you're tuning in, you're going to hear a lot more of these ideas, and hopefully remember them. So covered public speaking. We've covered a lot of ground, including business, as you remember from that epic chapter 6. So now I'm moving on to chapter 11, which is the cruel and unusual punishment. So how to survive on TV and radio. So this is approach to broadcast interviews. Consider a broadcast interview, whether on TV or radio, as a conversation rather than a confrontation. This mindset can alleviate pressure and create a more natural interaction. Then we go into the managing of the interview. So success in a broadcast interview often hinges on maintaining control. This means having a deep understanding of the topic and reminding yourself that you are likely more knowledgeable about it than the interviewer. And then it comes to, this actually kind of reminds me of Art of Explanation again, handling difficult questions. So when faced with challenging questions, remember you're not obligated to answer every query. You can tactfully divert questions you're uncomfortable with. Phrases like, it's premature to answer that, I haven't seen the report yet, or I don't deal in hypotheticals can be useful. Avoid saying no comment though, as it often implies evasion and can be counterproductive. Like, what? I do got that.
I don't deal in hypotheticals. I might adopt that.
Yeah. What if I don't deal in hypotheticals? And the last part of this, so it's the key tips for some interview success. So one, stay comfortable. Only discuss topics you're comfortable and knowledgeable about. If unsure about a subject, it's okay to decline the interview. Two is stay positive, so focus on the positive aspects instead of worrying about potential negatives. Confidence in your knowledge and abilities enhances your performance. Three, voice and appearance. So on radio, your voice conveys authority, so consider voice training if necessary. On television, appearance matters too, so dress well and ensure you're well-groomed. Paying attention to details like clean fingernails. It's kind of really rogue, but I like it.
But it's actually like quite a good point, as in I think people overlook that quite a lot, you know. The whole voice training thing, that makes a lot of sense. It's just what we've talked about before, like honing in on like particular skills within podcasting. I mean, podcasting is prime.
Yeah, well, we consider that the whole idea of going pro, like with the whole, you know, if you're going pro with something, you got to look at the sort of variables that equal success. And one of the ones, absolutely, if you're using your voice, it would be voice training, right? Especially if that's like the prominent, you know, with radio, right? What else is there? You can't see you. It's just your voice, your tone, your speed, etc. So a voice coach would just make sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, then we got the very last one, so delivery. So practice slowing down your speech to help calm your nerves. Familiarize yourself with the sound of your own voice to develop a comfortable and natural speaking pace. Something I still struggle with. I've just got really slow there.
I think we all struggle with it a bit.
Yeah,
it's quite a difficult one to, like, you know, consciously try and control.
Yeah, but that's why you need a voice coach, right? I mean, we've talked about this for a while. Yeah. So that was the how to survive a TV and radio interview.
It will come. That's why we're reading this. You know, when we're interviewed about this, you know, wise words, that's when we'll be using all these points. All right, so moving on to the last chapter now, chapter 12, which is future talk. The future is not what it used to be. The future of conversation in the digital era. There's concern among some that the proliferation of electronic media might lead to the demise of traditional conversation. However, the reality is quite the contrary. The advent of diverse electronic platforms has actually expanded our avenues of communication. We are engaging in conversation more frequently and through a greater variety of channels than ever before. Key qualities like openness, enthusiasm, and readiness to listen remain central to being an effective communicator, regardless of the medium used. I feel like this was written way well before social media.
Do you know what? On that note, I'm actually looking when it was written. I actually think it was quite release date.
You're right. I want to say, I'm going to guess.
Guess. Go for it.
2003.
Mate, way before. It was actually published in 1994.
Fuck. So the internet wasn't even really a thing yet.
No, so that's why, I mean, to be honest, man, that's why he's called it some sort of weird crap, like, diverse electronic platforms. Like, who the fuck calls it that?
Look at all these kids today on these diverse electronic platforms.
Oh, electronic media. Anyway, I still, by the way, I still agree to some extent.
Oh, no, I do, yeah.
Which is like the elements or principles of good communication exist outside of the media sphere.
Absolutely. But
you are right with the whole sort of, if you saw what's going on, sort of, you know, X or Twitter or whatnot, you'd be like, okay, these conversations are great. They're fantastic. Yeah. Look at that. Look at all these conversations that are happening.
Yeah. So, that's it. That was, you know, How to Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime by Larry King. And it was, you know, quite a straightforward book. We've touched on many of these topics before, but easy read.
And it is an easy read. You
know, a lot of actionable points.
There are a few tidbits, like I said, here and there, which, you know, might be less obvious. I think the whole idea of talking to yourself probably doesn't, you know, most people probably wouldn't even consider it, maybe. But I took that away. I was like, that's really interesting to just walk around your house talking to yourself. Why not? But yeah, a lot of it was quite generic. Like I was saying at the very beginning, like especially the business stuff, that stuff really annoys me just because I thought it was so surface level. It didn't deserve to be in the book, to be honest. You know, if I wanted to read that, I could just ask ChatGPT how to perform an interview and I would have got a probably
better answer. What he would call that.
Yeah. That's a good point, right? That was the Larry King book. This is a bit of a shorter episode, I think, because it was a shorter book. What are we doing next? So we're looking at definitely doing Think Faster, Talk Smarter at some point.
Need to get onto How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Okay, we're going to redo that. And we're going to do How to Have Impossible Conversations again, I believe. There's lots and lots of communication books. I think maybe one of the things we should possibly try and do as well off the back of this one being so similar to The Art of Explanation is try and find the ones that might have, you know, a bit of more of a unique perspective. More practical ideas. I mean, the one I just read quite recently on the trip to Hong Kong, The Good Arguments, is quite a good one around debating. I mean, it just takes a different side to communication, more like the argumentative side, and I think that could have different ideas than just the whole understanding your audience and stuff like that. So we can possibly move into that as well. I know we have like communication is such a broad subject, and we're still trying to sort of find our way through all these books and decide what's best to read. But yeah.
Yeah.